Hard Knock Radio, Davey D, hanging out with you this afternoon. We're still in the middle of Black History Month, and there's been a lot of things going on that we need to look at and celebrate. The other day, for people who don't know, with the born day of revolutionary freedom fighter Huey P. Newton, we should acknowledge that. There's been a lot of people who have been standing 10 toes down, tall and strong, fighting fascism, racism, and all kind of isms that are confronting us in this country. Also during Black History Month, we also want to acknowledge folks who have been languishing behind the jail cells, freedom fighters who put it all on the line and have been paying a price, political prisoners. One of them we should know is Mumia Abdul-Jamal, and we want to talk a little bit about what's going on with him, update you on his situation. And today we are honored to be joined by his firstborn, Jamal Eben Momia. Want to welcome you to the show. We've been talking a little bit, a lot of things going on, but we want to make sure that we focus on the plight of your father. He has not wavered. He has really made a huge sacrifice for our collective liberation. And I don't want people to take his name and just, you hear the name a lot and you just kind of treat it like, oh, okay. No. Let's focus in and really reflect that this man has been in prison for what, 47 years right now?
No, it's 44, 40,
44.
44 years. Yeah, he'd be 71 this year. He went to prison when he was like 27.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy.
As his firstborn, how have you been able to cope? What has that been like for you?
Well, one of the things it is having a mentor and a father that's been hands-on since you've been born. Taught you how to ride a bike, taught you how to deal with sports, taught you how to deal with defeat in sports. It was like shifting. Everything shifted. And then my mother, she was, of course, she was a single parent at this time because he was a hands-on father. So he was always at home, always taking me out, doing things. And one of the things it was, it shifted. Responsibility shifted like tenfold. And as you know, I was like nine and a half. And my father was like, you're the man of the house now until I get back. And then, boy, when he told me that, my mama used to tell me, you're not my daddy. You're not my daddy. But because I used to be like, what time? Everybody in? What's up? I gotta check all the windows, check all the doors. So one of the things, it took on a shift of responsibility. And it was something that you avoided your childhood because you always worried about everybody else. And you're thinking dad's going to be home soon, so he's going to be able to pick up where he left off. But still, we're still waiting.
So you were 9 years old when this happened, when
Correct.
he was incarcerated.
1981,
Right.
November the
Do
9th.
you remember the uproar and fanfare that led to him going to jail? Do you have memories of that? Were you able to comprehend what was going on?
Great question, Dave. A lot of times people don't really understand, but you got to go back to the temperature that it was politically in Philadelphia. And one of the things it was very racial tension because you had mostly Irish and Italian cops that actually was against black and brown. And one of the things it was my father was a journalist. And one of the things he did was he was continuously to speak on the things that's happening in the community, the things that he actually see. He interviewed people, meaning that when people have run-ins with the law, when people have bad experience, police brutality, people were murdered, their children were murdered, and they was not interviewed by mainstream media. And he would bring it in because he had a voice on a radio station, which was WDAS FM. And he used to give the news insights. And one of the things it was, he used to take me on some of his interviews. I remember when he interviewed Dr. J, because, like I said, I'm young, the
Dr.
76ers.
J, yeah.
Yeah, Julius Erving. So, It was very it was very contentious, towards African Americans and brown. It was like nobody speaks against the police at that time, or you're going to go to jail, you might get killed, or you might get beat. I mean, there was a lot of things that were going on, but African American neighborhoods was constantly surveilled. Like constantly, you got three. We used to call it the paddy wagon, because that's when you see the van. You see the police van, you stop, and you just hope they pass you, because they could scoop you up at any moment and just throw you in the back of the paddy wagon.
I think for a lot of people, it's hard for them to comprehend what that sort of constant surveillance and outright terror, hence the
Correct.
word that we use, police terrorism, was. I don't know if people generally have faced that daily onslaught. And sometimes it's annoying when you hear people say, well, I ain't my ancestors, I ain't my grandfather's generation. Well, Mumia comes from your grandfather's generation.
Right.
People like yourself were the elders, or people like him were the elders. And from what I always understood, they were pretty fearless. They were,
Well,
wasn't like they just turned the other cheek and allowed this to happen. We're talking about the Panthers. We're talking about the MOVE organization.
right.
And we're
So,
talking about
correct.
folks like your father who had a certain amount of intelligence and love for the people to speak truth to power in the face of the onslaught. I only bring this up not only to maybe give some context to people, but also we are in a moment of fascism right now. And from your standpoint, is this a different type of scenario that we're dealing with, or is this kind of like we've been through this before and you kind of have an understanding of what's happening or what's to come?
All right, great question again. And let me add to what you had said before to give it a more context on how someone will be targeted, like my father. Okay, not only he was outspoken in the year of 1981, he was labeled as the voice of the voiceless and mainstream. They did an article of him, and they said one to watch. So one of the things he was the Minister of Information at the age of 14 of the Black Panther Party in Philadelphia, North Philadelphia, off Columbia Avenue. And one of the things was that he was constantly doing was researching. So when he does this, he knows the names of the people. He did the research. He knows the prosecution. He knows the mayor. He knows the chain of command that it's supposed to be. He don't just see, oh, that's a white shirt. He'll be like, oh, that's Captain such and such. So one of the things that he did that annoyed them was that he would put articles in the Panther newspaper about the current events. And one of the things was when they, as you use the word terror, when they had did Columbia Avenue, they raided it and stood them all down and had them pull the pants down, like stand them up in the drawers, talking about we searching y'all for any weapons, and had them outside. And one of the things they wanted to do was ridicule, because people had the self-defense program, and it was a breakfast program, but it was also a program to let Black people know that they got to continue to stand for their rights. Like, we have rights. We are human beings. We don't have to be asking for permission when we are law-abiding citizens. So now, to answer your other question about do I feel that this is currently? Of course it is. It's the things that now what they call is called political lawfare, and then they politicize your criminal case to the point that they just don't like you. So if you look at Mumia's case, my father, they created things called the Mumia Rule. Is actually part of the books. Like, the judge was like, well, didn't we already answer this on Mumia case? So that's moot. We're gonna make that the Mumia rule. So any inmates from this state, because he was locked up in the state 30 years on death row, and then they commuted it. Amazingly, a federal judge, Judge Yan, said there is a constitutional violation. I don't see three or four, but I see one. So the thing that gets me is when you have a capital murder case, if it's one, then the whole case is tainted. This, because you have the same jurors that that you have during your trial that's different from a regular case is you have them during your sentence. They sentence you to death. So he said, okay, prosecution, I see one constitutional. So what you can do, you guys got 180 days to answer this, or his sentence is going to automatically commute to life. So now he went out of a river and put him in the ocean with lifers now. It's like, I says, that's amazing. They can remove you from death row after 30 years, after three death warrants were signed, and you survived that. So they says, okay, now we're going to put you out in population because you're older and everything. See if you survive that. And then we're going to put a Mumia rule where we can piss guys off that's not educated or understand that he didn't stop their motions or block their motions. You got the prosecution that put the political warfare in. And one of the things they did is the attack on Black Panthers has not stopped. That's what people fails to realize. For what that time that they stood to, what Black Panther threatened was their international support. You know, people don't know all the way up in North Africa, they had Panthers. So this thing is very deep. And one of the things that they want to do is keep us in a space, keep us overcrowded, keep us frustrated, and keep us politically ignorant. So when they arrest us, we're asking instead of saying, why are you locking me up? You know, so that's one of the things. So we are very much in this and we see it every day on mainstream TV. But those people are powerful, political, rich, and all of that. And they're going back and forth. But what we don't see is the people that are regular people living paycheck to paycheck, regular people that's trying to survive, regular people that has no education of the law and just been abused by officers that perhaps wanted to be corrupt. Or perhaps just want to have some collars, as they call it. I don't have enough arrests. So,
yeah, you know, so there was always that pressure and that economic incentive to do this. I want to come back. We're talking with Jamal Ibn Mumia, that is the son of Mumia Abul Jamal, if you're just tuning in. The Mumia rule, one that is designed to not only find an excuse to keep him in, but also a way to weaponize it against other people coming to, you know, who are incarcerated. They can go to the Mumia rule, and that brings anger towards your dad or potential anger towards your dad.
Correct.
When you told me this, and just now you said the attacks on the Panthers keep going. I don't know if you knew there was a Woodfox rule. They didn't call it that. But the Angola
Alfred
3,
Woodfox.
Alfred Woodfox. So we had
another
one of
revolutionary.
One of my buddies, who now is, you know, very well known, his work, Silky Slim, spent time in Angola. He's out of Louisiana. And he said that the way the guards would try to get the inmates in line or scare them is that they would bring up the name Woodfox. Say, you don't want you to Woodfox. You don't want to be like Woodfox. So they would constantly say that name, but the name wasn't to say he was a Panther. Let me tell you about his organizing. But they understood it as somebody who was doing solitary confinement. So the craziness.
23-1.
And at the time, he was still in, you know, the solitary confinement. But the fact that they would use the Panther name and weaponize it is something that is
well,
beyond crazy.
That's one of their strategies that they constantly do, and it's always to keep us in terror. So the point is that I'm trying to say is that a lot of times the courts, you know, the justice system has been going along with this. They've been putting a blind eye on this because my dad, the Mumia rule, is actually used in court cases, you know? And one of the things it is that it has the prosecution gives them a way out. It gives them a thing where they used to have the 2255, the habeas corpus, when a person is trying to get back into court and they have different Strickland restrictions, they call them gatekeepers. So they say, you gotta pass this. You passed 2 out of 3, but unfortunately, we have to deny you because you didn't pass the third one. It's kind of takes me back to the voting back in the days of the 60s and the 50s and the Appalachian trails and down deep south, whereas though they had the picture of the elephant or the picture of the donkey, and they had to say, well, we got a picture of a Black Panther. Which one you want to vote for? Because they had you have to read the Constitution and recite it before you can even vote. So they actually had voting for African Americans in the courtyard outside. So they had to point at what flag did they want to vote for, because the complexity that they always put at us, they always try to complexity with fear tactics, ignorance, and you're doing right, just listen to me. It's the same thing they say, I only got one word for you. Can you let me in, or can I do this? They abuse. And one of the things that they abuse, if you look at, we're going to take it back to the time of the 80s, right? You look at the a pop situation, right? So anytime we see all these elders coming home, 30 years, 40 years, all DNA said he wasn't there. So stop. So you already knew that. Some officer knew that it should have been a follow-up investigation, but because it was easy, like my father, one thing he did when they had the move 1979 Powhatan Village standoff, okay, which it was, I remember going to their headquarters because I was a child and my father took me and I couldn't understand it. They had a classroom in there, right? It kind of, weirded me out because I see the cat all on the back of the dog's back sitting down. I said, how cats and dogs are sleeping like this? They said animals is only doing what they're taught. And then they was vegetarians, they was vegans, they biting into potatoes and all that. But we didn't know then that all the vitamins and nutrients was in the skin. So I'm looking like they didn't even cook that food. So I'm 9 years old. I'm like a kid. I'm like eight, nine. And so they said they teach their own. So one of the things that the people that didn't understand them, they had block captains, and they was like, look, y'all making our block look bad. This and that. So we asking y'all to leave. They said, wait a minute, we purchased this home. We're not leaving nowhere. I don't care how many petitions you sign. So the police was like, well, you're disrupting the neighborhood, so you got to leave. So if you look it up, they called it the Powhatan Village in West Philadelphia, 1979. That's how the Move 9 actually went to jail for 30 years, 30 to 100 years, because they had a standoff. And one of the things happened, they had crushed newborns. They raided those houses to shoot, and it was an officer Rankin that died from friendly fire. And
I
everybody
remember,
understand the friendly fire was another officer that actually shot him. And then it was like, well, if y'all didn't start the commotion, then this officer would never got shot. That's like me saying, if I didn't go out to go catch the train to go to work, then I would have never got hit by a car. It would have never been an accident. So one of the things that they did was they couldn't trace nothing back to the move to actually say one of their bullets or something happened. So they said, we're gonna charge you as a family. Y'all want to be a family, so we're gonna sentence y'all all 30 to 100 years. And this is what my father was like, what kind of stuff is that? So he covered this case. And when he covered this case, they're doing a press conference. Mayor Frank Rizzo in Philadelphia. He was like, yeah, we got those radicals, and they're like this and that. We shoot first and ask questions second. So he see this guy raise his hand in the back, a journalist. I got pictures of that. My father got a pencil in his ear, and he's at the press conference, and he raises his hand, and he says, can you tell us about friendly fire? And he's like, what? Well, that's something that accidentally happens, but we're talking about these radicals that killed the officer. He says, sir, you still didn't tell us about friendly fire, because Officer Rankin bullet that murdered him was from another officer. So basically, we don't know if they had a confrontation or something before that. And then he was like, young man, you're going to be accountable for your action. So what he did, he had a backroom deal. We need to find out who the hell he
Wait,
is.
so Frank Rizzo, the
Frank
former
Rizzo,
police chief
he was
and
the
the
police mayor, the police chief of Philadelphia. He had a very racial tension going on. And he was like, like I say, it's always signs and symbols, right? One of the things that we need to keep in mind for every action is a reaction. Whether it's good or bad, we don't know what starts the wheel going. But yes, he publicly said, young man, you're going to be accountable. So he
asking that
was,
question.
Yes, publicly. You're doing a press conference. You know, you're a journalist. You do a press conference. You raise your hand in the back, and he's up here. He got the narrative. He got his theory. He's going on. Because they was like, how could you arrest nine people for one body? And it was a
Wow.
shootout. And where's the ballistics? Where's the evidence? And they was like, well, so when he did that, that kind of changed the thing. So then it takes you to different people. So when I say that is, you got to believe, well, this is racial tension going on right now. This is the 80s. I dare you, as an African American male, I don't care what you do, to publicly question me. I'm gonna make sure we get you. You know, and that was set like that. And then he was underneath the COINTELPRO. See, all this time he don't know that they had him under investigation since he was 14 years old. They even went to
Right.
his high school. They even went to his college and got a college. And the FBI was trying to get information, got it stand 10 toes down. They said, we can't release that to you. But this is the thing, because what happens is once I get a file on you, I can control the narrative of what's going
Yeah.
on. But if the question is, why am I investigating you if you are the Minister of Information, right? You're a young journalist, you're in a Black Panther newspaper, and you just questioned the mayor about a shootout and an officer that got killed when you should have avoided it and told the people that live on that block, I'm sorry, if you pay a mortgage, you're gonna have to, if the man don't cut his grass, y'all can cry and we can find him, but we cannot remove them from their home. So back then in Philadelphia, they used to have the block captains, and they was like the town watch, and they would get things and get, you know, they would get people, I guess,
Neighborhood watch, you
yeah,
know,
and they
an
would sign a
HOA.
petition and try to shame you in a way. So one of the things with Frank Rizzo, to get back with him, he had a henchman, right? Alfonso Diagiano, right? So what he was the lead officer on my father's case. Everybody know this is his henchman, right?
Wow.
So he's at the time, he's at the scene of the crime. He's the one that first came with the confession theory. He's the one that actually took my father's head and rammed it in a telephone pole. That's why he got a split in the middle of his head. At the time after he shot. See, he shot it, he shot. So one of the things that they said, we got you, we gone. You know, that's how they wanted to do that. So one of the things that I want people to understand is, what does frame up mean? Because that's
Right.
one of the things that you need to understand and define of frame up. And frame up is something when they can manipulate the narrative, manipulate the evidence, manipulate the witnesses. And it doesn't matter what you keep saying and raising your hand in court, if the evidence is not there or it don't appear, they can play the game, and the judges play the game. That's where the political lawfare came from. And one of the things of Diagiano, right? Alfonso, I want you to remember that name, because
Yeah.
it's wicked. So one of the things was, he was the leading officer. He was the initial officer that spoke at my father's suppression hearing. Anybody know about criminal law? You have a suppression hearing to suppress the evidence on the way it was obtained, or was it even involved in the crime?
Wow.
So he testified during it. But the question is, he could testify for the suppression hearing, and then he can't testify during the trial? Well, where he go?
So
One
he
of the
doesn't
things.
get, he never gets cross-examined.
Correct. And
Wow.
one of the things goes is, you know, you look at Philly. Philly is corrupt. It's deal with money. You got mob. I know they downplay the mafia and all that, but let me tell you, the mafia was a very impact up north, you know, in situations of Philadelphia on the East Coast.
I'm glad
Go ahead.
you said that, Jamal. We often talk about the face of racism, and it usually centers around a couple of entities. One, you're thinking of some Ku Klux Klan type, you know,
Correct.
some guy with a straw in his mouth and a hat, and walking around with a bullwhip, that type of person. And then a lot of times we talk about police. But to me, the biggest extraction of black talent, black wealth, and definitely black control was the mob. Rizzo and his connections, what was going on in New York. I mean, we could do a whole show on, people admire some of these artists like your Trick Tricks and whatever that talk about, oh, there's a no-fly zone. And they ignore the fact that the original no-fly zones were from the mob that would be like, if so-and-so goes to Chicago, he got to check in with Al Capone and these guys. And then when you go to New York, you got to check in with Dutch Schultz. And if you go to Vegas, it's got, it was like that. And they were very ruthless. They were very extracting. And there's a lot. I mean, we can go on
Well,
and on.
in support of that, with the mafia, what they did was they helped they helped the corrupted politicians get their hands clean, meaning they do all the dirty work. They were all the greasy. So they would go into all the back channels and get the work done. If you look at any of America conspiracies of some wet work or some work getting done, they used to contact the mob. And the mob is simple. They're like this, like any and most mobs. How much you gonna pay me? That's their bottom line. And then are you gonna not disrupt my criminal activity? Those are the agreements that they make. So crime and law enforcement corrupted was going hand in hand. And then you had too many corrupt, then you had less than the people that actually was trying to get hired and do a job. They make movies about it. They make shows about it. They had the show called The Shield. They had the other thing with Denzel Washington, and they make it
Training Day,
glorify
yeah.
and monetize it. But what happens when this was actually happening in people's life? Like my father, they were snatched from the ghetto because you got to look at it. The prison system was a monopoly. It was a monopoly. They said, how about we can get these people in prison and we can make money off of them by taking away the wealth and the growth and the work on the outside. Most of the people used to be them steel mills and those different corporations that used to work and everybody take a break at the same time and all that. They took up all the government contracts, the prisons, and had the inmates working for cents, and they ain't got to give no pension. They ain't got to pay them no high money or nothing. So this thing became monopolized. So how do you do that? You go into the inner cities. You go and you create this with these backhand crooked lawmakers that create these laws and legislation that sit there and always turn a blind eye. I'll say these last 4 years has been political theater because we have never seen underneath the hood. Now we see it underneath the hood. You know, they get mad at somebody or people get back and forth. It depends on the power. Just think about it. I always tell my family, I say, look, if they can do that to them and they got a law firm on retainer, what they gonna do to you and you got a public defender? So one of the things that happens is that that's the part that was going on at the time of my father thing was like, okay, I need you to line this up. See, a lot of times people don't know, they don't look at it. When you got corruption, it ain't just one person corrupt. You have to have another one, another one, another one. There's palms being greased. The pay goes to the top and it comes down. Okay. So the person you see may be the bottom person in the corruption. The person you don't see is the person that's pulling the strings. So you do in Philly, they had this political pyramid type thing, whereas though they have it going down. Say, like my father got arrested in downtown 13th and Locust, right? They call it the red light district, right? What people don't do is they let the government and judicial system get away with pass, meaning that they don't follow up on things. Like my father get arrested, 1981. He gets sentenced to death, 1982, July the 3rd, right? So he's on death row, fighting for his case, fighting for his innocence. To the day, he still claims his innocence because he was framed up and he was wrongfully accused. And then we look at the situation and we say, how is it possible the precinct that he got arrested in, right? Over 30 officers was indicted, and none of
Wow.
your cases got overturned. Like one officer get indicted, and if he's on any cases, we have to question
Right,
his
the legitimacy
finding.
of the case, right.
That's just reasonable. That's just law-abiding, and that's just common sense. So 30 of them get locked up. You don't think 30 officers, that's a lot in a precinct for corruption, went to
Right.
jail, pleaded out, assisted the government, right? Guess who their star witness was?
Oh, the Alfonso guy.
Alfonso? Did that? Yeah. And they downplay it because they changed the narrative. Oh, he just took a little money. He took a bribe, but he helped us take down 30 cops. Now, this is the thing. He was Rizzo's right-hand man. So he was a high-ranking officer. You think he didn't know about this corruption? Come on.
You
So
know.
these are the things that I like to unlayer. I say one thing about an onion is you got to take the layers off. But then when you start cutting into it, and then you start cooking it, then you start smelling the flavors. See, you got to cook it. You gotta
Yeah.
cook it. You can't play with it. So what I'm saying is that how are all these things not an issue in the trial? How are these not an issue in your hearings?
To your point, Jamal, we just, for people that are not in Philly, we get little pieces and tidbits. But we had that judge that was sentenced for taking all this money to send youth, as you said, juveniles to jail. And I forget what happened if he got off or something more recently, but that judge was, I mean, hundreds of people,
Yeah, but
that he
Steve,
was. Go ahead.
you saying a judge. Now, I'm saying you're absolutely correct. And I agree with you, Dave. One of the things that I'm just saying is we got to hold these people accountable. We can't just keep letting it fly over our head. We at a time now with social media, you can Google this. You can say, okay, who is Alfonso Diagana? You know what I mean? Okay, who is Frank Rizzo? Okay, who is Mumia Abu-Jamal? And one of the things that we felt like, and when I say we is we doing the Mumia Freedom Tour, is we feel like we need to give y'all informed over there on the West Coast for my brothers and sisters over there. We feel as though that we need to give y'all an update and understanding of it and a refreshment, if you will. That's why when we coming for our tour on the week of April 21st, my father's birthday is on that Thursday. It's going to be on the 24th. And we're
Right.
coming over there. We're coming to the Bay Area. We're coming through Oakland. We're coming through San Francisco. And we're going to enlighten. We want people to know things to not let this go as we did years ago. People like, oh, if that happened, he going to get out because they can't keep doing that. And another thing, I just want to just say about corruption and one thing is, and how the district attorney don't get no clean slate out of this. Okay. There was recently, as in December, the judgment of Pamela Denby, Judge Pamela Denby on my father's case. Okay. And one of the things that came up during that time was, ironically, the prosecution finds over 11 boxes of evidence
Oh,
that
that's
was on
right.
my father's original trial that was not disclosed to his attorney or him. So I'm not the smartest person in the world, but what is Brady? How does this work? Brady material. Like, how can I create a proper defense if I don't know all the witnesses? I don't know the notes. It's notes in there, witnesses telling prosecution where my money at. You told me that if I testified, I get paid. I didn't receive a check yet. And this came from the cab driver, Chober. These are things that is crazy. He was one of the witnesses.
Wow.
That, yeah. And he was on parole. He was on parole for throwing a cocktail at a school, burning a school. But they say, we want this Black Panther. We want this journalist gone. We don't care. We're gonna pay you. So you know the game. It don't matter, white, black, candy stripe.
Yeah.
People fold. So one of the things that we're trying to do is we are trying to just let people know that we don't forget about our brothers and sisters on the West Coast. We supported Huey's birthday yesterday. You guys had the All-Star game out there and everything the last previous weekend. It just passed. We keep up on things over there. We understand we got a couple events going, and towards the end I'll give that shout out on that. But I just wanted to know that we appreciate you even accepting and taking us on this interview, because
No, no, no doubt.
people need to understand that our political prisoners actually fought for us to be able to be on a thing called the internet, to be able
Yeah.
to speak with our First Amendment rights, freedom of speech. It ain't just protesting and walking. These people actually put skin in the game, blood on the line, and
Really?
some of them are still behind enemy lines, like my father. And he went through a medical thing a few years back, and he's still trying to get his diet together. But he had a diabetic shock, passed out, almost died.
Wow.
He got hepatitis C in his liver, right? That he just had to fight in court to get the medication. And the reason why he caught hepatitis C, right? When he got shot in 1981, December the 9th, they take him to the hospital, right? After they beat him up and stomped him. And then they give him contaminated blood of a blood transfusion that had hepatitis C in it. So, I mean,
Wow.
how many times we gonna allow them to keep trying to murder and delete our political prisoners? I mean, it's obvious. It's more writing on the wall. You go to the Mumia Rule. They tried to create contention inside of the penitentiary for ignorance, because they look at us like we're very reactive, we're radioactive. So people, their lawyers say, "Look, man, I had you, but that Mumia Rule that they used, that shot you down." And you see this old guy walking around the yard, and they like, "Oh, that's him over there."
Yeah.
And you know what I'm saying? They try to create this contention. And to some point that you have to ask yourself, like, why, after all these years, 44 years, that they have got the Fraternal Order of Police on board, they have got the widow on board, all this stuff, to murder this man. So they can't murder him legally because he got international support. He got letters from Desmond Tutu from South Africa. I can go on and on. He got streets named after him in Paris.
Right.
This, and then a lot of times people don't understand this. And I'm gonna need, are you familiar with the NPR, National Public Radio? Well, they hired my dad while he was on death row. So we got it on our Instagram. We got the picture on there, and we asked people, like, why would they remove him if you hired him? Because the people of the Fraternal Order of Police and the political warfare that's happened in Philadelphia, they told them that they were going to go at their financial backers if they don't remove him off of that. But how do you get a job when you're on death row till work on the radio? But you're so threatening. One of the
But
things is,
keep in mind, as you pointed out earlier, they were making people work under these government contracts. So, it's like it's not like they're not allowed to work because they're certainly doing a lot of work.
well, that too. But in support of that, what I'm trying to say is that his political involvement with the whole movement, with the community, the books that he's written, and it's so much as far as a wealth of information. They had
Right.
movies about him, they had documentary series about it. And at some point, you have to say, this man, and he's going for the Nobel Peace Prize. At some point, you can't keep planting the picture that this person is a murderer. My father had no criminal record before this. He was actually on the radio days before, if not the day before, this incident. So one of the things that we have to keep in mind, that black and brown has to be triple educated into the law, triple educated with their constitutional rights, triple educated into their rights and their safety to be able to protect themselves. That's
Right.
one of the things that the Black Panther Party did. They did the self-defense because they were educating people with literature. You have to arm yourself with truth and fact, because ignorance,
Right.
someone else takes your narrative, someone else places you away. And then it doesn't matter if you try to speak, because you may have your own people believe the narrative from the fake news.
Yeah. Which comes to this as we are closing out, Jamal. One, just on a side note, that judge, he was commuted, so he had a 17-year prison sentence for taking all this money to put kids in jail, and then Joe Biden commuted his sentence. So he got out. Two things. One, a lot of people have asked, why hasn't your father's sentence been commuted? I guess he can't get it commuted because it's a state thing
Well,
and
he
you have
would
to
be
go.
probably under a pardon. But go ahead, I'm gonna listen to your question.
So that would be one question. And then the other thing is that in Pennsylvania, we've had a lot of people become mayors, police chiefs, district attorneys. They've been black. And at a time when people say representation and vote black and skin folk and the whole nine, why haven't they stepped up in a way to use their power and say either we're going to do further investigation or if they were in a position, outright set them free? And that goes even beyond just blackness, but just the Democrats themselves. So how have you seen this thing? And maybe we can kind of give some context to it, because oftentimes, I mean, you look at Philadelphia, yeah, it's a lot of black folks there. So why is your father still in jail?
Great question. One of the things that we look at, and we have to realize that people have political agendas, people have ambition, and they sometimes are compromised. We look at the time when I spoke and I said that my father got off of death row magically when it was a constitutional violation and commuted to life in prison. The district attorney at that time was Seth Williams, a black guy. Okay, but he did not respond because the judges, that's how they do, they throw them alley-oops. They say, but if you don't respond or you don't say nothing, in 180 days, it'll automatically commute to life. Okay, but what they don't tell you is that Seth Williams, after that, he got caught and charged with some type of unlawful misconducts. Right?
Really?
Yes, they don't tell you that. Scandals, right? They don't tell you this. Okay, you got other black people in Philadelphia, and it's sad, but you have people like crabs in a barrel. So they want to pull you down. You have a great man called David P. Richardson, and he was a personal friend of my father. They were actually friends in high school, right? And he was a character witness on his original trial. And he also was the head of the Black Caucus, and he supported my father. If you pull it up, he has a speech that he do at City Hall. And ironically, after he made that speech and said that he's ashamed to work for a governor, Tom Ridge, he ironically dies in a bathtub eating a tuna sandwich. I said, why would you eat a sandwich in a bathtub? The
Bathtub.
man is 7 feet tall and like 300, 400 pounds. I don't see him sitting in a tub. But anyway, that's another story. Okay. So he was speaking out on the Black Caucus and educating them on Mumia. All right. You have Sonia Sanchez. Was actually a character witness on my father's original trial. And you have these things that they have, okay? So let's talk about the prosecution. You have Ed Rendell, which was the assistant
Right.
prosecution on my father's original trial. So if this corruption, he knew about it, okay? So now you look at him and you look at his ex-wife or his wife, Marjorie Rendell, that went up the ladder as a judge. She was a state judge and appeals court judge for Pennsylvania. So think about it. How can this case go up appeals if her husband, which was the district attorney, was there? And they say, oh no, she ain't gonna be looking at it. They work at the same building. I can sit a cup of coffee with you, Davey, and say, don't do that. You know, I can
Right.
politics behind the scenes. So one of the things that really is wash my back, scratch my pocket. Meaning, I'm gonna wash this away. You need to scratch my pocket with some money. Okay? They don't care. And you've seen it with the voting, you see it with the elections, you see it with the political lawfare, you know, as far as what they do is they sensationalize our ignorance. Okay. And one of the things they did was they played the racial tension. And our black people like to keep their head down on situations because their pockets is getting fat. And they'll tell them, don't talk about Mumia. I remember times I've spoken to lawyers black young lawyer, female. She said, I went to the governor's ball and I told him I knew you, and they told me to stay the hell away, and I better not say nothing about Mumia Case if I value my career. So for her to tell me that, what about the ones that ain't saying? Okay,
Wow.
so this is why I say at our day and time now, we have the internet. We can do our own search. We can do our own checking. Right now, we're going to be in your town, Dave, through the week of April 21st to the 25th. And we're going to be at Santa Rosa Junior College. We're going to be at the library on 88th Avenue in East Oakland. And we're going to be at the African American Art and Culture Complex
San
in
Francisco.
San Francisco. And it's also going to be hosted by Maricia Gabriel, Black Panther Party student at the Black Panther Party School, and daughter of Panthers Minister of Culture Emery Douglas and artist Asali Dickinson. And that's going to be for the birthday of my father. It's going to be a fundraiser birthday event. We're asking people to come out. You know, we're going to have the flyers. You can also be informed with Block Report Radio, you know, at gmail.com. You can go on Instagram, you know, and you can check us out at the Mumia Freedom Tour and follow us. And we're going to keep people posted because we believe that this got to get out. I don't believe in just segregating ourselves. Our minds has already been segregated. We got to open that up. So I believe
Right.
that if I give you something, we're going to have literature. We're also going to have one of my father's attorneys that actually worked on this case, Rachel Wolkenstein, you know, to give a legal dynamics of the case and how did it go through certain turbulence. We're going to do questions and answers because I don't like to just talk to people and then just let them be like, oh no. No, we're going to have a great program. It's going to be the Mumia Freedom Tour, and we're coming through there on the week of April 21st, 2025. That's Monday. And we're going, if you have a venue or you have some people that needs to be addressed at a section of the city that we may not touch, we still taking in some invitations. You know, it's limited, but like I said, don't waste any time. You can contact Block Report Radio, you know, at gmail.com. You can go on Instagram at Mumia Freedom Tour. And just let us know what your timeline look like, what the area is, because we always want safety, but we always want to educate our people, and we want to constantly let them know an update on Mumia as well as other political prisoners. But this time, like I said, my father is a great grandfather now. I'm a grandfather, so
Wow.
it brings tears to his eyes when he sees his granddaughters, and they now they're like 6 and 12 years old, and they say, Grandpa, why are you not home yet? And you know, and they ask me questions to him. I say, you got a chance to talk to your great grandfather. Ask him. So, I mean, we are a family, but our blood runs strong, our skin is thick, and we are not asking people, we are requesting that people ask us, join us, be involved, come out, support, and actually do your research. And if you come up with anything, like I said, we're trying to cover the part about if you got legal questions and if you're an attorney or whatever, come on out. We got somebody that actually worked on his case.
Real talk.
And
Jamal
I
Ibn Mumia,
appreciate you, man, for having me. Go
no, thank you for joining us. And I have a million more questions, but I know our time is short.
ahead. I know. Well, see,
But
hopefully we see you at some of the events.
Definitely. Let me ask you this. What lessons do you think we should learn? What mistakes do you think we should avoid? Because with Frank Rizzo, the former police chief turned mayor, who was running roughshod over black and brown folks, right? Y'all had fascism in Philadelphia. The corruption
So.
that you talked about, we can look and see that right now. It is in plain sight with this current administration. When you talked about the press, I'm gonna hold you accountable. We have a president that's talking about if you don't call it the Gulf of America, You can't come in. We're gonna sue you for writing about me. We're gonna get rid of you. You just had his right-hand man talk about 60 Minutes needs to go to jail, right? Just 60 Minutes you talk about. So we're seeing this scaled up. And part of this campaign was to send political enemies to prison, right? For long periods of time, 40 years, 30 years, 50 years. What lessons should we learn now? Because we're in the middle of this now. It's for a lot of people, it's front and center.
Okay. Well, great question. One of the things that I look at, right, is we look at TV, information, internet, this and that. So we call it content, right? So some things are content and some things are theater. So when you have these people, it's like, okay, you threw a rock at me, but you got a glass house. So now I'm gonna bombard you with some rocks. Okay, but how could they do that? The only way that people can do that and victimize you if you are not educated on your rights. We still got that thing called Constitution. Okay, and it's not, see, don't look at it as a piece of paper. I always tell my children, don't look at that as a piece of paper. You look at this as paper don't mean nothing if the people don't stand on it. See, people got to be on one accord. And one accord is once we educate ourselves, once we know our rights, then we can stand for our rights. We can't just say, hey, Davey, what should I do? What you think is best? And then what happens is that this, you get somebody that tells somebody something, and then that person does what that person told them without doing the proper research, without being adequate, without it being properly illustrated, and that person get jammed. And then he say, I didn't tell you that way. And they get emotional. We have to politically declutter ourselves in this society. We cannot keep playing ball in their game. You know,
Right.
we used to have back, we used to have black wealth, black societies, you know, Tulsa, Oklahoma, you know, Durham, P Street. You know, we used to have these things. And how do we have these things? Because we kept information in our community. We kept information with our people. We updated and educated, and we got to create love again, bro. We got to create understanding again, and we got to keep up with that thing called respect. If you don't respect me or respect you, I don't believe you respect your own father or your own brother or your own son or your daughter. So one of the things that black people and I'm talking about black people and brown, but black people used to come from humble beginning, and our elders taught us respect. Everybody had grandparents and stuff like that, or great uncles and stuff, and you go over there, you on your best behavior. Your mama give you that look, hey, don't you go in there acting no fool. So I'm telling you that we have to start educating ourselves. We have to protect ourselves. That's one of the things that the Panthers used to do. They used to educate us with self-defense. Look at the books. They got the thing. Huey and them and Bobby Seale, they set the blueprint. But we is like, I don't got to do that. That ain't got nothing to do with me. That does have something to do with you. Because today you could be stopped at a stop sign and find yourself in the penitentiary that fast. So one of the things I would say is we have to educate, we have to start community mobilizing, coming in and breaking these barriers. We don't, this stuff is theater. You know, you got this person over here, this person over here. I'm throwing and hide my hand. I'm throwing the rock and hide my hand. We don't know what they're doing in the back room. We don't know what back deals that they made. And they like, okay, well, you didn't pay me and you didn't do this. So I'm gonna go on here and I'm gonna do this. So my thing is, as black and brown people, because when we get in them courtroom, we don't got that law firm. We ain't got that retainer. We got like, oh, I'm gonna give you a lawyer. I'm gonna give you a public defender that's overworked and don't even care. He get $1,500 per person. So he flipping you. He flipping you like a job. So one of the things I would say is we need to keep up on things that we doing with the Mumia Freedom Tour. We got to keep educating ourselves. We got to keep up on our political prisoners. We got to keep up on our people, community. It starts with community.
Real talk. No, that's, I think you gave a lot for people to think about. So, Jamal Ibn Momir, we appreciate you joining us this afternoon. We'll be on the lookout for the Freedom Tour when you all come out west here in April, and we'll talk to you before then. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio, folks. We'll be
All
right
right.
back.